This is an ABC podcast.
Just a warning, today's episode contains some graphic content.
On Saturday, in Afghanistan's third biggest city, Herat, the Taliban set up a crane at one of the city's main roundabouts, and they suspended the bloodied body of one of four men they claimed that police had captured and killed for kidnapping. The video and others like it are shocking, and coupled with the new all-male interim cabinet and ministry that was recently unveiled, it seems to suggest that the Taliban are every bit as brutal and hardline this time as they were in the 1990s. Yet many observers on the ground say the Taliban have changed. So what is the evidence for that so far? I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. And today on The Signal, we're speaking with the chief of the Associated Press Bureau in Afghanistan, Kathy Gannon. We'll hear about daily life in Kabul so far and about what lies ahead. Kathy, you're one of very few Western journalists still left in Afghanistan at this point. Mm-hmm. What's it like in Kabul at the moment on the streets?
Yeah, well, you know, certainly traffic is very heavy again. People are out. The markets are open. Of course, you know, the banks are not working properly. People can only withdraw $200 a week because so much of the assets are still frozen. So you have long, long lineups outside of the bank. But I think the one thing people will say is that the security is a little bit better inside of Kabul and certainly on the roads leading to some of the other cities in the country. But so I think right now what you see is just a sense of a city returning to some sort of normal activity. Of course, you know, when you look a little deeper, the schools, some of them are running, the girls' schools for kids in grades, girls in grades 6 to 12, they're still not operating. The women are not at work by and large. I mean, there are some women at work in some departments of some ministries, mostly in the education and the health sector. So when you look a little bit deeper, you see that things aren't normal for at least half the country's population right now. But in terms of the city and the activity in the city, I think you're seeing Kabul quite quiet, quite, active in terms of chaotic traffic, markets open, stores open, people really trying to get on with their lives as best they can.
So a picture of people going about daily life, with that big question remaining about to what extent women and girls will still be allowed to participate.
Yeah, and we are going to focus on that uncertainty a little later. But first, there are a couple of other questions that we wanted answered. Like, for instance, whether things like sport or music will be permitted this time.
Well, there hasn't been an edict whether there's going to be music, whether there isn't going to be music. You certainly do hear in people's cars and that music playing. But yes, that's one of the concerns, you know, because when the Taliban were last in power between 96 and 2001, they did ban music. They banned most sports. Girls' sports have been banned. You still have boys playing football and cricket, but girls, unfortunately, I think really girls and women have suffered the greatest since the takeover of the Taliban in terms of edicts restricting their movement. But there's a lot of women on the street, though, and they're not accompanied by men. They're out by themselves. As we just went by the bank there now, there are groups of women waiting outside the bank, waiting for access to their accounts. So women, Afghan women are out. They are, you know, covered. They're not their faces, but they're covered with the traditional scarves and that. So women are out on the street, but they certainly have suffered the greatest in terms of restrictive movement, in terms of back to jobs, in terms of access to public spaces and, you know, political voices. But as far as music and cinema, the Taliban at this point, although most people are worried and afraid and feel that it is coming, that the Taliban haven't made an official pronouncement on whether they will, in fact, again, ban music and ban cinema. TV is still running. You still have TV. You have the news channel still on. Tolo News is still one of the most popular television news channels in the country. And it's still running. And they still have women presenters. How long will that last? I don't know. But it is continuing at this point. So it's a very uneven picture, I have to say.
The world was, you know, watching very closely in the weeks following the Taliban's recapture of Kabul. We were sort of waiting to see what kind of government the Taliban would form, how they would behave. Let's start with, you know, the question of who in the Taliban has made it to leadership position in this interim cabinet. What does the cabinet look like and what can we draw from that?
Yeah, well, the cabinet is all Taliban. It's not inclusive, as they had promised. It does include the same Taliban leadership that really has ruled the movement since its origins, really. They're the same leaders that were the leaders during their last time in power between 1996 and 2001. And, of course, you have several who are on the UN watch list or so-called blacklist, including the prime minister and the foreign minister, of course, the interior minister, Sirajuddin Haqqani, who is, of course, wanted by the FBI for questioning in connection with a number of really spectacular attacks on Kabul over the last 20 years. So the cabinet itself is very reflective of Taliban from 1996 to 2001. But I think what the world can take from that is that at this point, the Taliban as a movement is still in transition. And you do have people who are in the leadership who, when they were last in power between 1996 and 2001, really had rarely traveled outside of Kandahar. Kabul was a big step for many of them. Those same leaders, however, today have engaged on the world stage. They've been to Moscow. They've been to China. They've lived in Doha for years. So you do have a more worldly view within the Taliban leadership. How much divisions and how strong are divisions within the leadership between the pragmatists who say, listen, we have to look at how can we engage while still holding on to what we see as our traditional values? And those who say, no, we're not going to be pragmatists. We say this is how we're going to rule. This is what is our way of life and our edicts. And we will follow those regardless of what the world says. And I think that's maybe right now where the movement is seeing who will emerge as the stronger of the two, or will it be some sort of a combination of the two?
So just to recap, what Kathy's saying is that while it's true that the Taliban have already reneged on their earlier promise to appoint some non-Taliban members to the interim cabinet, there are nevertheless signs the group has changed since the 1990s. There is the fact that on the streets of Kabul, you do still see women going about their lives unaccompanied by men. And in some very limited instances, there are still some women going to work, particularly in the healthcare sector. And then there's also the fact that since the Western invasion in 2001, many of the Taliban have been exposed to the wider world, including places like Qatar, where a very conservative Islamic legal tradition is in place alongside greater freedoms and a thriving and more open economy.
And yet, as Kathy says, there are also contrary indications that the hardliners still hold sway. For example, Kathy did an interview last week with Mullah Nuruddin Turabi, who's the chief enforcer of the Taliban's harsh interpretation of Islamic law. And he told her there'd be more executions, along with the reintroduction of punishments like amputation for crimes like theft. Although in a change since the 90s, he also suggested there'd be female judges, and as Kathy suggested, that TV, mobile phones, photos and videos would remain permitted this time.
Right, so is it the hardliners or the pragmatists who are currently winning the fight?
I think at this point, really, it's too early to say. Certainly the makeup of the cabinet would give it to the hardliners, because the makeup certainly seems to be a more restrictive, certainly not inclusive in any way, shape, or form. And that was what was promised ahead of the cabinet. So clearly the makeup of the cabinet definitely puts the hardliners in the upper hand. But it's a big country. It's a different country than what they ruled between 1996 and 2001. Kabul is a different city that they ruled back then. I mean, there's 5-6 million people today, high rises, apartment complexes. There was none of that, private banks, none of that back in 1996. It was a much more compliant population. Whereas today you have a desperately poor population, which is much more advanced in terms of numbers, in terms of amenities, in terms of social development. And they have to figure out how to govern Afghanistan. And so I think it's fair to say that the hardliners really have the upper hand at this point. I don't think, at least not from where I sit, it's possible to make any long-term predictions or with any real sense of what tomorrow will bring with any kind of definite answers. I think that's still really very much up in the air.
Kathy, you were telling us a little bit before about what life has been like for Afghan women. What are the hard limits on women's participation in public life at the moment? And is there a real prospect that those could be reduced further?
Yeah, I think for sure there's a real prospect that they could be reduced further, that these restrictions will slowly be reduced. I think right now for women, there are women that are participating in some spheres. There are women in some of the departments. But by and large, they have been told to stay at home. It's not clear that they're going to put up with that for an extended period of time. And it's not clear that the Taliban want that to continue for an extended period of time. Some of the private universities are continuing with both men and women studying. There are public universities that are being prepared for both men and women. So I think that at this stage, while it is restrictive and women have been the ones to, I think, suffer the most in terms of edicts being directed toward them, I think it's really much, much too early to say, here's what life is going to be like for Afghan women.
So there's that uncertainty again. But in a hopeful sign, Kathy says there are young men in the Taliban who seem to be more moderate on this question than the older men in that group.
I was talking to some yesterday at the museum, and young lads from one of the provinces, they all said that girls should be educated. They all said that girls should, they need women doctors, they need women lawyers, they need women in the education field. So I think that it's really at this point very early to know how restricted life will be for them and for how long and what it will eventually look like.
We've also seen, right, Kathy, small protests by women at certain points. Was there much pushback to that?
Yeah, there were some small protests, and yes, there was some at the beginning, certainly aggressive pushback by the Taliban. But I think people also have to realize none of the men came out to protest. And a lot of the women here have said that I've talked to, you know, that have said that the problem also is that unfortunately the majority of the men are not in that much of a disagreement with the Taliban in terms of restrictions, maybe not to the same extent, but you certainly don't see thousands of men coming out onto the street to back up women's demands for greater access, for greater participation. And I was talking to a Taekwondo competitor, a woman in one of these shops, and she looked over at the the man who was running the shops, and she said the reality is that most of these men don't disagree wholeheartedly with the restrictions. And he sort of looked and he said, that's true. So it's a far more complicated picture and fight, really, that women in Afghanistan are waging for equality.
There's also been, you know, pretty much since the withdrawal and even before, fears about, you know, retaliatory violence towards people that worked with the previous government, that worked with the US and its allies. Mm. I mean, have we seen much of that, you know, in the past few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly there is that fear. There's no question. I think certainly they are looking for people, previous government employees, particularly in the intelligence field and in the defense field. As far as retaliation against those who worked with Americans or American companies or Western interests, while I don't rule out that there hasn't been random, I don't know that there has been any widespread at all. Certainly the fear is there. The evidence of actual happenings is not really there at any great extent. And for sure, there have been retaliatory attacks. But you also have to know that in 2001, when the Taliban were ousted, there were retaliatory attacks then as well. And then when the Taliban came in 1996, there were retaliatory attacks. And when the Mujahideen took over in 1992, so unfortunately, with every regime change, that has been, unfortunately, the pattern.
You've covered Afghanistan for decades now. You've seen the Taliban come and go and come again now. So much conflict over those years. Where do you see things headed from here?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult, and I think it's very difficult for Afghans. I think a lot of questions have to be asked about the previous 20 years, and for a lot of people, they will say that it wasn't a war for the Taliban to win. It was a situation or a conflict for the Afghan leadership over the last 20 years and the U.S. allies and the coalition to lose. I think there's a lot of soul searching that has yet to be done and that needs to be done to see why and how it has reached to this position. What the future holds for Afghans, sadly, they always seem to be caught in the middle, and their lives are difficult, and they struggle to try to find a way forward to feed their families and to have a decent life for themselves and their families.
That's The Signal for today. Our email, if you'd like to reach us, is thesignal@abc.net.au, or you can always reach me or Smiley on Twitter. And we'll be back tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.